I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is hour 12 of our 12-hour marathon to celebrate the beginning of Toxic Free Talk Radio and the release of my book, Toxic Free, today. And it's been a long day, but I'm still awake and excited and enthusiastic because we've had such a great list of guests today, and I see that our next guest is now here, and Eliana, I know you can hear me, so we'll be with you in just a minute or two. So my book, Toxic Free, is different from my books in the past in that in the past I've been writing about for almost 30 years, I've been writing about how toxic chemicals are in consumer products that we use in our homes every day and how they affect our health and how we can reduce our exposure to toxic chemicals. And in this new book, I'm talking about the other side of the equation here that we also need to do, and that is to recognize that toxic chemicals are in our bodies. And they've been in our bodies much longer than I ever thought. While I was researching this book, I found that it's been known since 1944 that every human body and every animal and plant on the planet has had toxic chemicals in our bodies. So I was born, with, as many of us were, with toxic chemicals in my body, and it only increased from that point. Last year, I decided to start removing toxic chemicals from my body, and in doing that and going through that detox process, I had a significant improvement in my health that was even greater than the improvement that occurred in my health when I stopped being exposed to toxic chemicals in my home. And so I can see that hand in hand, the combination of removing the chemicals that are going into our bodies and also removing the chemicals out of our bodies is really what's needed for people to be healthy today. We, at this point in time, toxic chemicals have been associated with virtually every illness now. The Centers for Disease Control is monitoring the toxic chemical level in the bodies of Americans. And we have every body that they have tested has at least 200 chemicals in it, toxic chemicals that all have known health effects. But there is something that we can do. And that's what my book, Toxic Free, is about. So we're going to connect with our last guest tonight. I'm going to bring Eliana online, and then I'm going to talk to you about who she is. Hi, Eliana.
Hi, Deborah.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you really well. Yeah.
Okay, good. So let me introduce you for a minute, and then we'll talk.
All right.
I've known Eliana for, I guess, 25 years or something like that. I met her when I was writing my very first book, Non-Toxic and Natural. And at the time, she was selling futons, I think, but she was also selling plans and materials so that somebody could make their own futon. And I just thought that was the coolest thing, that you could actually sew your own bed with your own hands and that somebody would talk to you about that. And we've been friends ever since. Every time I can, when I go to California, I go visit Eliana up in Montague. And I sleep on, she has, her company is Shepherd's Dream, shepherdsdream.com, which she founded and is now run by her daughter, Sarah. And I have slept in the showroom. I have slept in the room where they make beds. That's how non-toxic this place is. and it's just, it's a wonderful company and it's a wonderful place. And we're going to talk about not only how non-toxic the mattresses are, but also how sustainable and local. In the last hour, Eliana, we talked to Harmony Susala.
Yeah.
And so I can consider both you and Harmony. It's interesting that you both ended up in the same, right next to each other, because I consider both of you to be pioneering women in offering an innovative non-toxic product. So why don't you tell us what, I've heard your story, but I want everyone else to hear your story too. So tell us what made you choose a non-toxic direction, and why beds and why wool?
Okay. Long story, about 30 years now.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it started when I was a young mother, and I was searching for the perfect bed. And, of course, the standard American bed was not my cup of tea. The inner spring always made me feel a little ungrounded, you could say.
Uh-huh.
And so I preferred sleeping on the floor, but at that time there was nothing natural available for sleeping on, and so it was a foam on the floor. Well, it was much more to my liking than inner spring, box spring, and all that. And so when I first saw a handmade cotton futon, which is the standard, traditional standard bed in Japan, I was very excited to see something handmade, natural, that I would just want to cozy into. And
let me interrupt you for a second, because I think it's important to say that that Japanese futon that you saw is not the same futon as what we think of as a futon today.
Yeah, well, things sort of took a turn for the worse soon after. But in the very early stages, there were a few macrobiotic people who had discovered the Japanese cotton futon and were hand-making them, and they were not so thick as they became
and
unwieldy.
And in Japan, don't they roll them up in
the
morning?
Yeah, they do a daily maintenance, yeah.
Right.
So they make them thin, manageable, small, a single person. So if you have two people wanting to sleep next to each other, you would put two of them next to each other. And then in the morning, it would be placed on the railing outside to air. And so they were able to maintain a dry, comfortable cotton futon in that culture, in that tradition. But here in America, people are used to seeing big beds and the inner spring and box spring, you know. It was a welcome sight to see something simple, beautiful, natural. And the market started to insert foam into the cotton futons and made them thicker because people wanted to see it looking more like a typical mattress. And this was a recipe for disaster because cotton, it's a plant fiber. It is, I've come to call it passive as opposed to active. Wool to me is an active fiber. Cotton is more of a passive fiber. So it draws moisture into it very readily, and it releases it very slowly. And so if you don't have, you really have to be on top of your maintenance to keep mildew from starting to form in the
mm-hmm.
cotton.
Uh-huh.
And so most of the cotton futons, if you can still, I know they're still around, are not, I don't recommend them. They're not going to hold up. They're not going to be maintainable because they're too heavy, and the cotton is just not able to deal with the moisture that it receives. The sleeping body releases a lot of moisture. So, so after seeing my cotton, that first cotton futon, I was so excited I wanted to make one for every one of my family members and my children. And so I did. I found somebody who knew how to make the traditional Japanese cotton futon. And then I thought, well, I've got to share this information. And so I did workshops. And then I wrote up the manuals and made the materials available through mail order. And I actually sold equipment, very simple equipment, long needles, and then the instructions to people all over the world, but mostly the U.S. and Canada, and that's where Deborah, you came in the first time and found me out, and put the information in your book, and that was actually a real boost for the early stages of my home business. And you've been around ever since, supporting me at those key moments when there's evolutionary change happening in my world, bed world.
So I'll just tell everybody that Eliana and I used to live only about an hour away from each other, that I lived out in West Marin County and Eliana lived in Sonoma. So it was Sonoma County in Sebastopol.
Right.
And so it was not a long drive for us to see each other, and that I was, you know, it was easy for me to just go to the showroom. And we, during that time, we'll talk a little later about
it. Yeah, we'll touch on the wool certification that you helped
us. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
But I, how many years
ago was that?
Solution, I'm trying to figure out. So I started out, my first bed that wasn't a synthetic bed was a single mattress that I bought from some mattress store that it was in the back and they didn't even know what to do with it. And I'm sure it wasn't 100% natural, but it was a lot better than what I was sleeping on. Mm-hmm. And then I got a cotton futon, and it was just, and I was sleeping on the floor on the cotton futon, and it was just so hard, I could hardly stand it.
Uh-huh.
And then I got a wool mattress, but it was like 10 inches thick or something. It was not, it was from somebody else. And I remember what happened. This was the mattress that I was discarding when you came to my house in Forest Knolls and brought your mattress, the one I'm sleeping on now. I don't know if you remember, but it had gathered so much moisture that the cotton cover had actually rotted and ripped.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was only a couple years old.
Yeah.
But it
that's because of all the moisture that the body releases in the detoxification process. And so the airing is a very, very important.
I couldn't air it because it was too thick.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So,
yeah. Even with a slab, it's not still not enough air.
We talk about the design whenever, so go on.
Yeah, well, what we did was with the cotton futon is we started making them thinner and recommended people layer them.
Yes.
So what you had was 3-inch cotton futons on top of each other instead of a 6-inch cotton futon. I actually even tried this foam thing that was in the early days in the center of it, and it was a disaster. It really added a lot of, trapped moisture into it and made the situation worse. So that was immediately abandoned and never returned to. And so one of the things in my career here as a prototyper of natural bedding that works in our culture, in our lifestyles, lost my train of thought there.
Okay.
So we have we arrived at the layers, but we realized that cotton, being this passive fiber, that it was not going to work here. And so we looked and found, discovered that there was some wool available through one source that was an extension program to Davis University, where they had a small mill, and they were running some wool. So we started to use wool at that point. That was about in 1987. And we were so impressed with wool, we all just totally fell in love with it. Because it provided, first of all, it's an active fiber, so it's very actively releasing the moisture. It doesn't hold moisture in it, and nor does it hold smells. And you were talking about that with Harmony a little bit about smells. Certain fabrics will hold that more. Wool is very actively; it's like a self-cleaning fiber. Also, it had an innate resilience that never goes away. Cotton will firm up, and it can be kept, if it's maintained properly, it can be kept a little bit resilient, but not the way wool does.
And I can totally vouch for that, because I have been sleeping on this mattress. I've been here for 9 years, and it's the same mattress that you brought to me in Forest Knolls, and it's still as resilient as the day I got it.
They're just wonderful, and they're heirlooms. So it's not, you don't have to replace your mattress in 10, 15 years. You will have it for the rest of your life.
Yes, I believe that.
And so resilience, ability to deal with moisture without mildewing, also for bed bugs and for bacteria, it's a deterrent because it doesn't hold moisture. Down is a nightmare with bed bugs, as are synthetics, because the moisture is held in place. And let's see, what was the well, one of the added benefits, wool is naturally flame resistant, which meant we didn't have to go through any of the flammability tests. We always came out with flying colors without adding anything to deter, you know, the borate powder or other more toxic chemicals that are added for flame resistance. It was not necessary. Wool did it by itself. And there's something, I mean, tests have been done in comparing wool to down to synthetics. And wool creates an electromagnetic environment that matches or complements your body's own electrical system. And so it is calming. It actually, you know, balances out heart rate. People sleep deeper. You know, the deep sleep that is the healing sleep. So eventually one of my customers said, you know, Eliana, you've been doing this a while. I trust you. I would like you to make for me the bed that you really make for me, the mattress that you think would work. And I had never made a wool mattress. Wool is very lofty, and cotton is not that way. So it's mm-hmm. it's easier to make it into a mattress. And so we were a little intimidated by the prospect, but we did it, and it worked. And it took a little practice, but we figured out how to make a really beautiful, evenly distributed wool mattress. And then we added to that the wool encasement. So now we had a wool mattress that was completely 100% wool.
Love that it has a wool cover. Oh my God. Having had a mattress with a cotton cover and inside, it just doesn't match.
Right.
And it's like the cover and the filling are one in your wool mattress.
Yes. So the mattress has been a big hit. We do one that's about 5 inches thick, and then we do one called the skinny. It's 4 inches thick. So for people that don't need as much give, and by the way, firmness, you know, we talk about beds. When you go out and look for beds, people get just blown away by all the. It's very confusing to try mm-hmm. to figure out what would be the best bed for you. And they tell you, that there's this type of a spring with this, you know, and then there's the softer version or the firmer version, and it's confusing. That firm support that is created by a mattress that is filled with material, the right material, wool specifically. We haven't found anything that comes close to performing the way wool does in that sleeping environment. Now we're not vulnerable to the moisture issue anymore, and the wool is efficient enough at dealing with the moisture that even a 5-inch mattress on slats are important. Can stay dry. And then, you know, I was always searching for all the components. I wanted a complete bed, and the mattress is always a stickler. So now we had the mattress, and then I've always believed in layers too. So on top of the mattress, you can place another topper filled with wool. The one we make is encased with organic cotton, and a lot of people start with that so they can get wool under them. Just put it on top of the mattress that you now have, and then add the mattress when you can afford to do it. In fact, we kind of came up with this idea of a wool surround. Surround yourself with wool. So just put a wool pad under you, some kind. You can use a wool felt, too, which we'll get into later, under you. And then that is easy to manage in air and sun compared to the mattress.
Uh-huh.
And then you have your wool comforter on top of you and wool pillows, wool-filled pillows. And so you're in a complete environment of wool. And so you are embraced by this ideal microclimate. You know, the body, when you're sleeping, is constantly fluctuating temperature-wise in order to detoxify and balance itself. And so the wool assists in bringing the body temperature where it needs to be very quickly. And so there's little energy required for the body to get its desired temperature so that your sleep remains deep. You know, if you get overheated, that's going to wake you. If you're cold, that's going to wake you.
A couple of years ago, I went to San Francisco for a few months and lived there for 3 months in a rented furnished apartment. And it came with just regular synthetic bed. And a couple of nights on that bed, I just had to go down and buy a wool topper because I couldn't stand sleeping even for a few nights on that. And the wool made all the difference.
It makes all the difference.
Even though I knew that there was a synthetic mattress under there, the fact that I had wool next to my body was comforting. It's comforting.
Yes.
There's probably a reason why counting sheep makes you go to sleep.
Yeah. Well, and wool is like you were saying, comforting. It seems to relax. Like I had an experience once where my partner, Bob, he was having an asthma attack and he had a very hard time breathing. And I had brought my wool bedding with us. We were in a hotel. And I wrapped him in the wool comforter and immediately he started to relax and be able to breathe again.
Yeah.
You know, so there is something very, very magical and very healing in the wool. I've come to call it, you know, wool is a medicine. It's very, very healing. So, yeah, we stopped using cotton batting altogether and focused on just using the wool. And so we now have a complete system, the slatted frame. You can also, from Shepherd's Dream, you can buy or build your own insert, which would take the place of a box spring, let's say, because a lot of bed frames are designed to take box spring and inner spring, and so they're low.
Yeah.
And by putting in, building a slatted box to take the place of the box spring works really well, and then you can just put the wool mattress on top of that and then the rest of it. So it's complete now. Also, I just put a little plug in for the neck roll because I think neck support is very important, and we have a very nice little neck roll that is, you know, it's a must for me. I never sleep without
my
neck roll.
For me too. How many years have I been sleeping on your neck roll? Since I first started using it, I don't think there's been a night when I haven't used it, and I've probably replaced it two or three times, but it lasts and lasts and lasts.
And
it's like my neck is not comfortable unless it's on your neck roll.
It's there. And what a wonderful place to have that wool medicine right at that very sensitive spot on your, you know, neck.
Yeah.
For the whole night. Yeah, it's very nice.
I would say that I have all of these things. I don't just have the mattress. I have the comforter. I have wool pillows. I have the wool neck roll. And Eliana's going to talk, I'm sure, about the wool felt. And I have one of those, too. Made by Eliana's own hands.
Uh-huh, and feet. It's a foot-stomping process I use to make the felt. You know, I was thinking that maybe I would talk a little bit about where I am and what surrounds me here in my woolly world, and that way be able to share a little bit about the mill that brought us here to the Shasta Valley 10 years ago.
Yes, what I'd like you to do is talk about how all the different parts of the process all happen so close together. If you just describe all that, that would be great.
Yeah. So when I was living in Sonoma County, when we were starting Shepherd's Dream after having sold the natural bedroom back in 93 or so, and there was a man who lived up here in Montague who called me one day and wanted to talk about, you know, what my, you know, the my products, and he said he was a shepherd, and he had been looking for how he could enter into, you know, being part of the industry, the chain of events that leads to a wool bed. And so we realized at that time, this was in about 2000, that the processing of the wool batting had gone downhill, and it was hard for us to find real quality batting. And so Patrick started to talk to people who knew, and there aren't that many, but there were still some people that could help him understand what it would take to create a mill, a carding mill, that would do what we needed it to for the wool mattress. We needed wide batting and thicker, if we could get it, for layering into the mattress. And so we kept our, you know, ears to the grapevine and found out that there was a mill in Oregon that was closing its doors like so many had before it. And they were the carding mill was up for grabs, and he went and bought it and brought it back to Montague and set up a mill in a leased building. He was so passionate about this project, and within a year he was running the most beautiful batting I had ever seen, and he was very open to all my suggestions about having ecological criteria for the wool and so forth. So it was an incredible thing that happened there, and it was strong enough that it was what brought us here. So a year later, we decided to move up here near the mill, and actually the mill is just a quarter mile down, you know, down the road from us here. So it's a dream come true. Patrick passed away 3 years later, and we were all wondering what would happen to the mill. It was just getting going and so forth. At the time, we had a young mattress maker, a young man in his early 20s, who was very attracted to the world of wool and got to know Patrick and would help him clean the machines and so forth. And so he got connected there with Patrick. So he took over the mill. Patrick gave it to him, basically. Gave him the mill, all the machinery, for free, and lots of wool stock, and even some money in the bank to keep him going for a little while. But he still needed to get more orders, more customers. And so over the next few years, he did a lot of networking, traveling, meeting people all over the country to see what they were doing and how he could collaborate and how he could, increase his customer base and so forth. And so he has done an amazing job. Now we have a mill that is totally in the black, totally sustainable.
Right.
And in fact, he because so many mills have been going out of business here in the U.S., some of the equipment has been available for scrap metal price. And so Nathan found out, and he went and picked this stuff up for next to nothing. And he has built a second mill now. That just happened. Yeah.
Wow.
So he has twice the capacity as of last week was the first run on the new mill. The demand for wool worldwide has really, really exploded. And in fact, 75%, I just found this out today, 75% of the U.S. wool is being exported, most of it to China. You know, we want to keep our wool here. I know that as the demand for it increases here, we'll be keeping more and more of it. But and this has been good for the wool growers too, because they're used to not getting much for their wool, and so they've tended to not value that part of their the sheep. And so that's really changed. The price has doubled in the last couple of years to the wool grower, which is exactly how it should be.
Oh, wow.
And how what I've always, you know, I've strived for that. So things are going in the right direction.
Good. Talk about creating organic standards for wool.
Okay, well, what happened was in the early stages of using wool, we were, you know, and I started to look around. I mean, there was sheep where I was living, you know, like, where's this wool going? And so I found out that, you know, through the North Bay Wool Growers Association, they would get together and talk about what they were doing. And I invited myself in and let them know about what I was doing and would they sell directly to me? And in that way, we would have more control over what was going on. And so they were very happy to work with me. And so we wanted to develop a standard, an ecological standard. We called it Pure Grow at the time.
And there was no standard at the time, right? There was no standard.
What's that?
At the time, there were no wool
organic. Standard. There was no organic standard at that time. And so we just decided to start with what we call Pure Grow and just start to implement some of the things we thought were important, like no pesticides and herbicides on the land and ample rotation so that the sheep are healthier because they're not eating too closely into the earth where the eggs are. From the poop, I guess, and then you have bacteria, and you have the need for more, you know, more antibiotics and inoculations, you know, so ample rotation, predator friendly, so using techniques that were you know harmless to wildlife, And Deborah stepped in. It was wonderful to have your help with that, sitting round table with the local Sonoma County growers, and we had.
I remember us doing that.
Yeah, we had a couple of guys from Davis University who were professors in animal husbandry. And so it was great, and we came up with something and got started. And actually, my first wool came from a woman. Living in Bodega Bay with her sheep, and she was the most open to looking at all this, you know, the Pure Grow standards. So she's the one that supplied me with my first 500 pounds of wool to play with, and then when the rest of the growers saw what we had done, they were ready to hop on to and provide their wool. So there was a few years where we were getting all our wool from our Sonoma County wool growers. And so that was very satisfying, and now the processing though was sort of stuck a little bit behind, and this is where Patrick came in and saved the day, and set a new precedent there.
I think that was about the time when I got my mattress, because I remember that my mattress had Sonoma County wool. It was sewn in Sebastopol. So the whole entire thing was just right there in my little bioregion in the west side of the coast there.
Right.
And I still sleep on this mattress, and I still think about that. It was so important to me to do it that way. And I really appreciated that what you were doing. I still appreciate what you're doing.
I know. It's such a blessing. I often... you know, feel so blessed to be doing what I'm doing, to be working with this amazing material. Of course, I love sheep so much now. And they're such peaceful animals and you know,
they are.
Wonderful companions for humans here. And they supply us with this incredible, I feel that wool is very protective. It creates a sense of being feeling protected, you know.
Well, that's what it does. It actually protects the sheep. That it has
yeah.
that nature to it. So, so talk about the sheep, about the shearing of the sheep, and so because I think that some people have concerns about, you know, that the sheep are killed to get the wool and things like that. But
yeah. And they're not. They're not killed to get the wool.
Talk about how the wool is obtained, especially
yeah.
here.
Well, when we first started working with the Sonoma County growers, I learned a lot. And I learned that in the U.S. that wool was treated like dirt, basically. That they were getting so little for their wool that they couldn't even pay the cost to shear and so forth. And so I immediately upped the price threefold. And this, of course, got their attention. But in exchange, I wanted to look at how we, you know, going to a grading system. In other words, going back to skirting, what they call skirting the wool, which is, you know, the fresh fleece is thrown on a table, and then the dirty stuff and the dungs are cut off, and so you have much cleaner wool to begin with when you go into the washing process.
Uh-huh.
So, like I know that you know, let's talk for a second about how, you know, the wool has gotten sort of a bad rep because a lot of people have this experience of itchiness, right?
Right.
And a lot of that, I believe, is because of the carbonizing that became a standard practice in washing the wool, which is breaks it down. It's very harsh on the wool and creates like a splintery or split kind
mm-hmm.
of end, and that's what causes the itching. There's also differences in alkalinity between sheep breeds, and so, you know, choosing the right sheep breed. But most of them work very well without being itchy. So the fact that our wool is so delicately handled in the processing, and it's very comfortable to be directly on. In fact, in the winter, I sleep right on felt. I don't use a sheet. I love to crawl into a wool bed because it's instantly warming
yeah.
and welcoming. And then in the summer, because it's warmer and I tend to, you know, perspire more and so forth, I use a cotton sheet over it. And because if I'm sweating in bed on wool felt, then there could be a little bit of itchiness, but it's very minimal. So, we have, and let's go further with the certification. Nathan has taken it on, and he, you know, being a young man with a consciousness about ecology, it was very important to him to be part of the organic movement. And so now at the mill, it's called the Wool Gatherers Carding Mill, that was built by Patrick and Mel. And that 25% of what they produce is certified organic, and about the rest of it is what they call eco wool. And this is their own standard. And for this EcoWool standard, they have toxicology tests twice, once every 2 years, to check for even heavy metals, but also herbicides, pesticides, antibiotics, and, you know, other harmful chemicals.
So people shouldn't assume that all wool batting is the same. Because, you know, people say, well, you shouldn't use wool because it's got antimony or whatever it is in it and stuff like that. But a lot of it has to do with where it's grown, how it's handled, and that a lot of places don't give information about the details of that. But you do. You are in control of your product from beginning to end, that you're not just buying wool from someplace. You're actually, it's all
yeah.
in your specifications.
We're buying, yeah, he has about probably 30 or so sources for his wool, 30 different wool growers, and every single one of them, it has to go for testing every 2 years to make sure that it's going to pass the standard. He's right on top of that, and my daughter, who is now owner manager of Shepherd's Dream, is very, very enthusiastic and committed to ecological standards for wool and its production. Yeah, so they're gonna keep that flag high. I'm not concerned about that.
Good.
Yeah, and Nathan has carved out a reputation for himself now. Across the whole country, he's met all the big players to see what they're doing, and they, you know, they respect him and appreciate him and his passion for what he's doing, and the organic segment of wool is a growing market. It's a growing demand for it across the U.S., actually across the world. So. Things are moving in the right direction, and
that's so good to hear. And it's also so good to hear that your business is growing and flourishing when the rest of the economy is just people are wondering what's going on, you know. But you're making a sustainable product, something that
When we first moved here to the Shasta Valley, it was just me and my partner Bob and Sarah and Logan. There's four of us. Now there's a team of eight. Sarah has honed the group. She has a wonderful team of people, and they're all, you know, love what they're doing. I actually live right on top of the Shepherd's Dream workshop, so I get to see and visit and talk and.
Uh-huh.
And they're all excited that I'm on the radio with you tonight, and that we get to have the archive on the website and listen to it. Everybody will have a chance to hear this.
Well, I want to say hello to all the Shepherd Dream staff.
Yeah, we have one of the crew just makes pillows, and she makes the most beautiful sculpted wool pillows. It's just a joy to see how she works with the materials, and there's something never boring about it for people like her, like them and me. We love to be around beautiful materials like that, and it's calming, and so it's wonderful work to have. And then Nathan, who started out pretty much with just he and the original millwright that Patrick worked with, he's grown the team to 12 young men. Running it over there, and they're all with smiles on their faces, and just it's just a great, wonderful feeling to be part of this. So
you can really feel all that. You can feel happiness in a product. You know that this really is a handmade. That you're sewing these mattresses by hand, and all that hand that goes into the milling, and that all of you are doing it with joy and love, and that really comes across in the finished product. You can really feel that.
Yeah, it's a good life. It's a good life for us. Yeah. I've been able to, since Sarah took over the business, I've been able to sort of hone into the next step. Well, so what is the next thing that I want to look at? And I discovered wool felting. Made my first wool felt with the help of a local person who knew how to do it. They're sheep shearers here, and they showed us their way of felting. And so I, for the last few years, I've been developing that. And now I can make very large felts, size of a king bed, and both white and dark wool. And so the dark is nice.
Explain what a felt is for people who don't know.
So felt is, I get the thickest batting that I can off the mill, and then it's actually one of the old methods. Felting is so old. There's such a rich culture, world culture in felting. It's just, it goes on and on and on. So this method is like it's kind of a takeoff on the Mongolian felting, where they roll the wool onto a long tube, and then they hitch it up behind a horse, and the horse just runs around the field for a few hours, and then they after they wet it down, and voila, you've got felt. And they use it as walls for their yurts, and of course for sleeping on, and for clothing, and so forth. So what I do is I take this thick batting, which most of the work is done for me at the mill, made into this beautiful uniform batting, and I use a screening material that I lay it inside of, and roll it up, wet it, and foot stomp for a half hour or so, or up to an hour, depending on the wool. Some wools take more felting to stabilize, and then I do a washing machine method of felting it even more, and we get these beautiful felts. And I,
because what happens is that when you accidentally wash a sweater and put it in the dryer and it shrinks. And so the wool in its natural state is all these little coils with a lot of air inside.
Right.
And then you felt it, and the coils they grab onto each other.
They grab onto each other. And
they stay all clumped together.
Yes.
And
they get really, really dense. It gets
really
dense.
Yes.
And but it retains
resiliency.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so I have a new prototype I'm working on, which is the felt layers are layered on top of each other for your mattress instead of a mattress. It's wonderful for young people. Young people still have a lot of integrity in the structure of their body, and they are attracted to firmness, and they can sleep very comfortably on one felt folded in half, for example, right?
Wow.
If they need to. But if they want it to be more give, well, then they can add more felts.
I just love it.
And then they're washable, Deborah. Felts are washable, so you can really have a lot of control for people that are highly sensitive, let's say, and they want to give it the extra washing. You can do that, but sun is very, very powerful and very effective at neutralizing anything that may be in there that may be irritating anyone, which very rarely ever happens, but.
Yeah.
But it is a really nice option. Stains, things happen, to be able to wash it. And it doesn't have to be done in the machine. It can easily be done. Roll it back up onto a long pole and do the foot stomping again with soapy hot water or cold water. And you've got your felt is clean. So, and it dries in a few hours. I mean, it's very fast drying. It's so much easier to maintain than anything else we've worked with. Yeah. So I'm enjoying that, and I'm in the process of starting a new company called Heartfelt. And the idea is to gather together more felters as needed to create a collective of felters. At some point I'll be getting the website up, and people will be able to see closer and read more about it. So stay
tuned. And you'll
tuned
certainly
to that.
Let me know the minute that happens.
I will. Absolutely. Did you want to look at, I don't know how much time we have left, but.
We have about 10 minutes.
Okay. Do you want to sort of go over a healthy bed checklist kind of thing? When you're creating a really healthy bed, you mentioned Harmony was talking, or the guest was asking about one of your, not the guest, the one of the callers who called in, asked about cotton sheets and the formaldehyde and so forth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this weird kind of thing about cotton sheets. You can, a lot of the cotton sheets have been treated with this treatment that is designed to stay in the sheet for the life of the sheet.
Right.
And
right.
It is toxic, and it is formaldehyde released through it all for the life of the sheet. And it makes it less permeable. It's not as breathable a sheet. So you need to look for sheets that are untreated. And it will say that. Okay, so untreated bed sheets. And Koyuchi is a good source for a company that's working with
well, they're organic.
Yeah, it's all organic. And so, it's all really good sheeting. And they do beautiful sateens and percales. And they also do flannel. Now, if one thing is with flannel sheets, you're safe because they don't use a wrinkle resistant treatment for flannel sheets.
Right.
And so, you know, that's something.
I don't know how many years I've been doing this. I sleep on flannel sheets all year long. And even in Florida, I sleep on flannel sheets. And people think that flannel sheets are for winter.
Yeah.
But they absorb the perspiration much better than a percale sheet.
Yeah.
And so I actually am cooler sleeping on my flannel sheets.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. So flannel's good, folks. You know, and you can get that in a lot of sources. But the organic, beautiful sateen sheeting that is untreated can be purchased as well. So sheets, okay. And then the slatted frame, airflow. The guiding principles in the design of the wool bed. Well, that's a really, really important one, is slats and continual airflow. Now you don't have to worry about it, you know, because it's on slats and the air is able to move through the whole thing. And then, of course, the use of natural material bedding. And Shepherd's Dream now does everything in wool, and you can get everything you need. Let's see, what else do we... there's other things about the bedroom. One thing is turn the electricity off in your bedroom.
Yeah.
So that you don't have that electrical, energy going through the walls, and it will disturb your sleep. To have that floating around, it's really good to just turn that off.
Yeah.
Another thing is keep your room very dark, pitch dark.
Uh-huh.
Where you sleep, no light. And then also fresh air. Make sure you're getting lots of fresh air. The bedroom is a very, very sacred place. The bed is a very sacred place. This is where you're born on a bed. You die on a bed. You have babies. And you make love, and you have dreams, and you heal. I mean, it is so important. It's if you have a healthy...
Your list here, because when we sleep, that's our restorative time for our body. And
that's right.
And I recently have come to appreciate the value of rest as an activity, because even though my body's lying on the bed and it's still inside my body, that's when our body is detoxing, actually.
Exactly.
And it's rebuilding itself. And that instead of feeling like I have to go, go, go all the time, mm-hmm. I'm now saying, I'm going to do this activity of rest because it's so valuable to me. And I think that's why beds and bedrooms are so important, in addition to all of the things, that if you want to be healthy, that you really need to allow your body to restore itself and detox itself.
That's
something that is just omitted from healthcare. They talk about rest, but they're just talking about sleep. The people don't have the concept of, now I'm lying here restoring my body.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a beautiful thing.
Well, you know, I was really pleased to hear Dr. McCullough, who a lot of people are familiar with. He's really reached a lot of people in the mainstream of the U.S. And a few months ago, he came out with a big promotional thing for wool, and said that adding wool to his, you know, program for good sleep made the biggest difference in his sleeping. So
that's great.
Yeah. And a few things to, you know, people are planning to create a healthy bed, a natural bed, you know, and they may have to budget for such a thing. The wool mattress is fairly expensive. But keep in mind that the mattress is going to last you the rest of your life, and you'll probably have people fighting over it later. I mean, it's an heirloom. It's, you know, it's a precious, precious heirloom that will go.
It's priceless. It's yeah. Not even think about
yeah.
how
yeah.
much it costs, because
right. yeah.
it's every night I appreciate that I have it, and when
I know.
Go to travel
I
and I'm sleeping on it.
Hours and hours every
back.
Day.
Yeah. You know,
so,
it's just my bed.
So it's something to work for is to get the 100% all wool
yeah.
bed.
Yeah.
But if you can't do it right away, you can start by getting a slatted frame and make sure the slats are the right distance apart for our system or something similar. And then if you, you know, need to use something else, stay away from inner springs. I think they're the worst.
I do too.
Yeah. And so foam or latex, not memory foam. Memory foam is very toxic.
Yeah.
You know? The Tempur-Pedic is very toxic and very overheating. People have complained to me about that often, about the Tempur-Pedic seems to have the most overheating influence on the body. And people have sort of thought of it as this alternative, like a more healthy alternative, but
yeah,
it really isn't. I would recommend...
We're coming to the end of our time, and what's going to happen is that it's just going to cut you off.
Okay.
So I want to make sure that we have time to say goodnight.
Yeah,
it's specifically put you in this hour because it's the middle of the night here, and we're talking about good sleep. And
yeah.
I get off here. I'm going to go lie on my Shepherd's Dream mattress and have a good night's sleep.
Okay. Sounds wonderful. Oh. Thank you so much, Deborah, for having me on and giving me the opportunity to share. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you.
And, yeah, so I was going to say, tell to the listeners, call Shepherd's Dream, put yourself on their list, because they give very good discounts once in a while, and they'll send you an email letting you know. So it's really worth it to do that.
And that's shepherdsdream.com.
Yes, shepherdsdream.com. And the ladies will be happy to help you.
And tell them that you heard about it on my radio show.
Okay, yes.
Okay. Good. Well, we're going to have to go before we get cut off. And I will
okay.
talk to you soon. And thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Good night.
Okay, good night.
Sweet woolly dreams.
Thank you. Okay, well, we do have less than 2 minutes now after being on the air here for 12 hours today. I so appreciate everybody who has been a guest and all of you who have been listening. It's prompting me that I only have 90 seconds left. So I am going to say goodnight, and we will have many more of these shows. So go to my website, DeborahNonToxic.com. Sign up for my newsletter so that you can find out who's going to be on and when. And we'll just go from here to just create together a toxic-free world. Good night.